Sponsored by Laura Fiorman Center for Healthy Living. My name is Ruvane Becker, founder and program chair. Hosting the Faraksanya, I should like to take this opportunity to extend our gratitude to the Young Israel Two Gods Hill for hosting this event, and in particular to Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, to Mora D'Asra for his encouragement and appreciation for Laura Fiorman's initiatives, and to his office assistant, Susan Rosenfeld, for her support as well. Laura Fiorman was established to help you, the consumer, in making appropriate decisions regarding your health care needs. In fact, this issue has become more and more compelling as health care delivery is now more complex than ever before. Our focus is consumer empowerment. The more knowledgeable you are, the better decisions you will make. It is my belief and experience as well that ultimately the overall quality of care delivered by providers will thereby also be improved. We are proud of our successes. These include this Caring for Our Elders education programming, as well as the many calls that we have directed and advocacy we have provided regarding such needs as finding an appropriate nursing home, home care support, and geriatric medical support. Equally rewarding and beneficial to the Jewish community as a whole is the fact that non-Jewish public officials attending our seminars have expressed gratitude to Laura Fiorman for the opportunity of listening and learning about our special needs. Cassette tapes of our programs have also been requested and are now available at the registration desk. As a quality assurance and practice management expert, and one clearly promoting the concept of cultural competency, I'm sometimes asked, what's the big deal? What difference does it make? Well, the federal government has finally found it significant. Among the principal guidelines for defining a culturally competent program, as presented by the federal government, are 1, the recognition that such concepts as family and community are different from various cultures and even for subgroups within cultures. Secondly, acknowledgement and acceptance of cultural differences that exist and have an impact on service delivery. But we don't need federal guidelines to tell us about the significance of cultural competency. If a home care worker is not familiar with and respectful of kashrus, we have a major problem. Needless to say, if there's a lack of acceptance of Shabbos, the spirit of Shabbos, and a host of other events such as Panesim, we have a problem. Clearly, cultural competency improves patient relations, improves patient satisfaction, and strengthens the possibility for establishing realistic goals and compliance to the plan of care described and prescribed by clinicians. Further, to give us a frame of reference for this evening's program, I should like to present to you some facts. There are over 20,000 home care agencies in the United States today. Of those agencies, 9,600 are Medicare-certified home health agencies, 2,200 Medicare-certified hospices, and the rest are non-participating home health agencies, home care aid organizations, and hospices. The need for long-term care assistance by the elderly is expected to become more pressing in years to come, given the aging of the population, and especially the growing numbers of the age 85 plus population who are at greatest risk of using long-term care. Most long-term care is provided by informal caregivers. Despite substantial public spending for long-term care, families provide the bulk of long-term care services to family members with physical and cognitive disabilities. 37 million caregivers provide informal or unpaid care to family members of all ages. Typically, this care is provided by adult children to elderly parents. About 95% of the functionally impaired elderly living in the community receive at least some assistance from informal caregivers, but about two-thirds rely exclusively on unpaid sources, generally family friends, for their care. Caregiving frequently competes with the demands of employment and requires caregivers to reduce work hours, take time off without pay, or quit their jobs. Multiple categories of care are provided in the home setting, including home health care, various types of rehabilitative therapy, personal assistance, personal care, and home care chore services. So what do? There are so many choices, hundreds of agencies serving our local area. How do we know what's right for us? Well, I do not consider myself an expert on home care, though my resume was a principal vehicle for obtaining a major city contract for home care delivery. And while I don't consider myself an expert on hospice and end-of-life issues, though I coordinated perhaps one of the first seminars for the Queens community focusing on the issue with Rabbi Moshe Kendler, the keynote presenter, about 25 years ago, what I do know is that we have organized an outstanding panel of experts, professionals, and rabbanim to address and inform us this evening. We look forward to their advice, direction, expertise, and unfortunately in some instances their personal experiences to guide and direct our own decision-making needs. Our first presenter is Mrs. Judy Griffin, consumer advocate, public official, and role model for us all. Judy will provide us with an overview of the essentials for choosing home care services. As in the past program, we kindly reserve your questions for the designated time when all the facility presentations are completed. Judy Griffin.
Can you all hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. I'm very happy to be here tonight. I would just like to start out by saying that I could really also give the last talk for tonight for the consumers, from the consumers' point of view. I'm going to say that for Dr. Bennett, but I would like to just share one or two of my own very recent experiences. Because when my husband first became ill, we started out with home care, paying privately for a few hours a day. As his needs became stronger, we got more home care, some through Medicare, some through private pay. Toward the end, we were getting home care from one agency was supplying the a nurse. That agency was supplied home care and health aide who provided personal care, but she came from a different agency. A third agency provided the high-tech care. There were days when we had four or five people coming into the house the same day. It just worked out that way. But I have to tell you, it really worked. And I'm just going to give you three examples. It enabled my husband to stay home until 10 days before he died. And we were tremendously grateful for the fact that home care did exist and that these people were as good as they were. One home care worker, when we told her that her liked avocado, she went shopping, could not find avocado. The next day, she came in with avocado she had bought on her own time and refused to take anybody to work. Another home care worker I still have contact with to this day. She calls every few weeks and we talk and we established a really strong bond and Erd knew that whatever he wanted, if it was in her power to do, she would do. The home care worker, the nurse from the high-tech agency came tons and tons of time because he had a catheter that changed his, he needed to regulate his pain medication. There was one Friday night when he came three different times because it just wasn't working right. And again, I'm tremendously grateful for the fact that home care exists, and I think everybody should really realize, some people think the workers are terrible and not going to do anybody good. That does not have to be true. I'm not saying it's perfect, not all of them are perfect, but nothing is, we're not perfect either. Before getting some type of formal home care, some families kind of use some of the things that are already in the system, informal support, meals on wheels, daycare, programs like that. When it becomes apparent that these programs are not enough, that's the time to consider more formal home care. And very often, if you'll tell a daughter, think about home care for your mother, there will be a lot of resistance on the caregiver's part. I don't want anybody craving up the kitchen. She's going to be angry at me if I even suggest it. She's going to immediately say no. what's going to happen if it's somebody who's non-Jewish and she's prejudiced and she's going to call somebody something that's going to make it very uncomfortable? Is she going to be able to do the same kind of job that I do? What kind of person am I? Why aren't I good enough to do all this for her, whether it's for my mother or my husband? Why can't I do this? Something must be wrong with me. If it's for my mother, how could I do this? I bring up the people yet, and yet another means do everything for them. Don't give it to somebody else to do. Somebody's not going to keep the kitchen as clean as I would, or she's not going to treat her the way I would. She's going to yell at her, or maybe not to the word, she's going to hit her. All of these are reasons that caregivers may be reluctant. And I think what you have to consider, I think what you have to consider really is what's going to happen if you don't get care. Many of you are in the Spanish generation, many of you have full-time jobs, and it's very difficult having a full-time job and then coming home and assuming all this care, or sitting at work and worrying about it and calling 10 times a day to see if everything is okay. And I think just as much as we owe to our spouses or to our parents, we owe something to ourselves, because think about what's going to happen if you get sick as a result of all of this. And I think that's really, really important to consider. And also, remember, and I think I said this in my first lecture when I spoke about nursing homes, remember that nothing can't be changed. If you try it and it doesn't work, don't do it. You can always fire somebody, and you can always decide that you want to do it again. But it's important to overcome your resistance. Once you've overcome your resistance and agreed to give it a try, then it's time to overcome the client's resistance. And that may be a little bit harder. But I would not even suggest you're trying to convince your mother to get home care if you're not convinced about yourself, because mothers read you through all the way. Mothers will know. She'll know exactly what your feelings are. Even if you tell her, oh, I think it's going to be a wonderful idea, she's going to know what your real feelings are, and she'll act right onto that. So how are you going to convince her if she doesn't want to do it? Well, again, going back to some of the same topics, most of you did not hear my nursing home speech, but some of the same techniques apply. Number one, you could just start with a little bit. My father had Alzheimer's, and we wanted my mother to get home care, and she absolutely felt it was not necessary. And one of the things she finally agreed to was 2 hours once a week. Before my father died, he was getting 24-hour home care, but at least the wedge had been made. The other thing is offering it as a choice. In other words, if you say to your mother or your husband or your aunt, whoever it is you're caring for, if you say to them, would you rather have somebody, you know, I really worry about you, and I think you need some help. Would you rather have somebody come into the house and help you out, or would you rather go to an adult residence or a nursing home? How many of you would say you'd rather have help at home? Right? So, but you're not telling her, you're giving her the choice. The other thing is who it comes from. Who the question comes from, who the suggestion comes from. Because sometimes, again, using my mother's example, when we had suggested, I've been a geriatric social worker for God knows how many years, but coming from me, you know, it didn't mean anything. All of a sudden, one day, she was talking to her rabbi, and the rabbi said, you know, Sylvia, you really, really need some help with Sam. That did it for her. So it really depends on who the suggestion comes from. Very often, coming from a grandchild will be much more effective than coming from a child, because from a child, it's, you know, who are you? You guided me. I guided you. But coming from a grandchild, the granddaughter says, you know, Bobby, I really worry about you. Look how much you love me. So offering a choice, a wedge, and who it comes from. The other thing is take advantage of hospitalizations. Because when somebody is in a hospital and comes out from a hospital, it's much easier to accept help. Than just straight from home. So those are just a few strategies. How do you get to a home care agency? If you're in a hospital will recommend it. You do not have to accept the agency they choose, unless, and it's important, unless, if the hospitals have contracts with certain agencies, then it may be more necessary. But generally, there are a few agencies that they have contracts with, Also, it depends on what prevalent. For example, DHI has contracts with certain agencies. Now, you do have to accept an agency that has contracts with DHI, but generally, there is some choice. You can get a recommendation by your doctor. You can call the Department for the Aging. You can go through friends. You don't have to have an agency. What you might want to do is, if your friend has had a very good home care worker, paid for privately, you may choose to choose that person if she's no longer available, if she's available. There are advantages and disadvantages to that. The biggest advantage is that you know the person. You know that this person gives a very high recommendation. The biggest disadvantage is that there's no agency backing them up. So that if for some reason, if you hire that person and she works out well, what's going to happen if she gets sick? Now, if she has a friend that you might rely on, that's fine, but it is something to take into consideration. And then it's a gamble whether you want 95% of the time for it to be a known quantity and 5% unknown, or if you want it to be perhaps an unknown quantity with an agency references. But it is something to consider. What are you going to ask the agency? If you are going to an agency, what are you going to ask the agency, and what are you going to ask the home care worker? These are some of the things that I would want to know. Is the agency certified or licensed? How long has it been in existence? What kind of specialized training? Now, in this case, you want to know whether they have workers that are trained, that are Jewish culturally competent, and know how to use a kosher kitchen, which of course is crucial. Do they speak the language your relative speaks? And that's not always possible to get, but if they do, it's certainly helpful. Do they know about Shabbos? What are their emergency services? How many hours of training do they provide their workers? How often does the supervisor come to see the home care worker? How many hours will they provide? And then, of course, you want to ask somebody financial questions. Is there a fee? Some agencies charge a fee in addition to the hourly rate. Does the rate include transportation? What happens if the worker needs additional hours and they have to stay in an emergency? Will they be able to do it? Can they show you the worker's references? And some of the future speakers may want to address this, because I'm not sure that they will actually do this, but I would ask for it anyway just to see if they do, because I think it might be good. Does the worker drive? Has the worker had experience with that particular type of patient? If it's an Alzheimer's patient, and many home care patients are, then you want to know whether the worker has had experience with Alzheimer's patients, because they do have special needs. If it's a patient who had a stroke or whatever the illness is, you want to know whether they've had experience with that particular type. Those are just some of the general questions. There are several different types of agencies that offer home care. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just give you a very broad overview, kind of starting with the agencies that provide the clients that need the most care. Cynthia and I were talking before, and she was saying that she hopes that the end result of tonight's meeting will not be more confusion rather than less confusion. And I certainly hope that will be true. What we're trying to do is just, in general, give you kind of an overview of the kinds of care that are available. The future speakers will speak about each program in a little bit more detail. I'm starting out with hospice, because that's probably the one that is for people who are the sickest. Although, if a client has terminal disease with less than 6 months life expectancy, then hospice can be paid for by both Medicare and Medicaid. Hospice care is care at home with hospitalization as necessary. They provide nurses as much as needed or as often as needed, hopefully won't be too often. Nurses supervise home care workers. It's a program of coordinated care in order to enable the patient to be treated at home with highest amount of dignity and the least amount of pain. And the best kind of death is to die at home with your loved ones. And hospice care tries to see that happens when possible and provides an enormous amount of support, not only to the patient, but to the family. And it's a wonderful, wonderful way of care. The one possible problem with hospice care, or the one drawback, you might say, for some people, is that if you still want aggressive care for your relative, then they would not really qualify for hospice care. And there were other criteria which Michael will talk to you about a little bit more. But generally, hospice care is fairly new in the United States, I would say in the past probably 20, 30 years. And it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for people who need it. If you're not terminal, your relative is not terminal, but would need a nursing home if they were not be able to be kept at home, then they might qualify for what's called the Lombardi program, or nursing home without walls. In order to qualify for Lombardi, in order for it to make sense, you would need to have Medicaid, because otherwise it's too expensive. But basically, Lombardi is a program of coordinated care. Remember when I spoke to you before and I told you one agency did this and one agency did that and the third agency did the next thing, and it worked out well. But in Lombardi, it's all provided by one agency. And what happens is that this one agency gets a certain amount of money that they can use through Medicaid. They can use that money for your patient in any way that they can kind of devise some creative way of using the money. They can make you a combination of home care and day care and respite care and transportation. And as long as they don't go over that amount of money, they could really provide the care that's needed. The problem, one of the problems with Lombardi is that as far as the home care is concerned, because of the specific amount of money that they can use altogether, it usually will not pay for more than 8 hours of home care a day. So that if your relative needs more than 8 hours a day, Lombardi might not work out. But Lombardi generally is a good program, and it also cannot cost more than a certain percentage of what a nursing home would cost. The other advantage to Lombardi is a little bit difficult, but for spouses who may want to qualify for Medicaid, the Medicaid laws for Lombardi are the nursing home Medicaid laws, which are more liberal for spouses. It's a little too complicated to get into tonight, but if you have a spouse and don't qualify for Medicaid, under home care Medicaid, you might qualify under Lombardi, which allows spouses a lot more money. So it is something to consider. If you don't qualify for Lombardi, then there's a lot of Medicare. You mentioned the amount. Which is just regular Medicare. Medicare will pay for home care. Medicare is usually a certified agency, and they will pay for home care as long as there is a need for skilled nursing care. And that's very important to remember. Because if there is a need for skilled nursing care, if there's a fracture cap, or if there are dressings that have to be changed, or if oxygen is needed, or if there's a need for physical therapy, any of those needs, and the patient is homebound, and the patient basically has to be basically homebound, then Medicare will pay for the nurse and the physical therapist, and perhaps the speech therapist and the social worker, and will also pay for a home care worker to come in to take care of the personal needs of bathing and cooking and things like that, but only up to 20 hours a week. So remember, Medicare pays for skilled nursing care plus home care, personal care, 4 hours a day, up to 4 hours a day, up to 20 hours a week. Now that's important to know because if you need more than 20 hours a week, then Medicare itself is not going to need more than 20 hours a week of home care. Medicare itself will not be enough. The way this works out is you call your doctor, the doctor calls the home care agency, or you can kind of research the home care agency, even ask the doctor, you know, suggest to the doctor. The doctor has to fill out a form for the home care agency. And the home care agency will then have the nurse come visit you. The nurse will determine how many hours you need, how many hours of home care you're going to get. The minute the need for nursing care stops, the home care worker will also stop. So that as soon as you have physical therapy, as soon as physical therapy is no longer essential, they're not going to provide the home care anymore. But it certainly is, there are a lot of people who have many hours of care through Medicare, and again, it's a wonderful thing. And there are no financial requirements. Whether you're a millionaire or whether you're a pauper, if you have Social Security, if you have Medicare, then you will qualify for this. You do not have to spend your own money. You're going to be able to hear hearing a little bit more from some of the certified agencies. What happens if you don't have Medicare, or if those hours are not enough, 20 hours a week are not enough, then what happens? Then you have Medicaid. In the back of the room, there were the financial figures for Medicaid, but basically for a couple, the income is $875, and the savings are $5,220 plus $3,000 burial funds. For a single person, its income is $600 and savings is $3,600. It's just very low, 30% is plus $1,500. So that sometimes you may think you qualify for Medicaid and you don't. But Nate, what you should know as far as home care Medicaid, there are two things you should know. If you qualify on the basis of your savings, but don't qualify on the basis of income, there is a surplus income plan. In other words, I told you that your income has to be $600 or less. But if your income is $700, if you spend the difference between $600 and $700, which is, let's say, $100 a month, once you spend that $100 a month on medical issues, including what you're paying for medications and things like that, Medicaid will cover. So that's important to know. I don't want to go into too much. And Medicaid will supply a lot more personal care. Now, the way to access Medicaid depends on whether you also need the skilled care or not. If you need the skilled care, then you do this through one of the skilled care agencies. If not, then they will help you with the whole thing. If not, if you don't need skilled care, then you go through the city, ask your doctor to call, social worker to call, contact. For people who want to hire their own person through Medicaid, there's something called concepts in care. Concepts, and we talked about this one, we're going to talk about this with me tonight. Concepts in care is how you hire your own person to do Medicaid, and you know, and Medicaid will pay them. And it's a good program in that you can have somebody that you know doing it, and it could be a relative. The problem with concepts in care is that there's no backup. Normally, with Medicaid, with a home care worker, basically what will happen, if that worker is sick and that worker can't come in, the agency will send somebody else. With concepts in care, there's really nobody else. You would be responsible for finding the other person. But it is a possibility. If you don't have enough money to pay privately, but don't qualify for Medicaid, there are some other options. The city has a program called ICEP, Expanded In-Home Service for the Elderly Program. They will provide some care on a sliding scale basis. The problem with ICEP is that there are waiting lists for many of the programs. They go according to locations, and there are waiting lists, but it is a possibility. For veterans, there is some special help that could be offered, and there's a number to call, 1-888-VETS-NYS. For Holocaust survivors, self-help and Blue Card agencies sometimes help out a little bit, just sort of with the interim. For clients with dementia, the Alzheimer's Association and our unit at the Department for the Aging have special grants for one time, one of them is about $600, one of them is about $800, where you can use that toward home care. It's not going to be enough on a long-term basis, but it might be enough to tie you over for special respite care if you want to go wait for a weekend and you want somebody to stay with your relatives. These grants will pay for that, so they are things to be considered. We talked about a lot of different choices. One of the other choices is long-term care insurance. And there are pros and cons, but you should just know that it's available. I want to close. I've talked about a lot of different types of care, hospice care, Lombardi, Medicare, Medicaid, concepts in care. I've got a lot of different things. I think the important thing is to know that you do have choices. But I also wanted to just close in with some techniques in order to make the home care meaningful, how to make it succeed. First one is to have realistic expectations. My mother was very unhappy with her home care because they didn't clean her toilet the way she liked to clean herself. Now, that's just not real. You know, that's just not real.
not real, and we have to know what your expectations are. Agreeing, hitting up with the healthcare worker and the agency's specific tasks, because doing this will make it easier then for somebody, will make it harder for somebody to say, well, this was not one of the things that I was supposed to do. If you all agree with this ahead of time, some people suggested making up a list of 10 traits that you would like to see in the home care, the 10 most important traits, let's say, and then rating them, prioritizing them. So if somebody really doesn't fit in the seventh category, if she does your first three or four things very well, then that will be helpful. Give them as much information as you can about your relatives. Share as much as you can, because this gives them more things to talk about, more things to build on. Show them some pictures, and then she can say, well, is this the grandchild who did this, or the grandchild who did that? Anything to kind of encourage the lines of communication. Treat them as professional, not as a syndrome, because these are care professionals, and these are people who have their own needs. Just as you're sharing your culture, ask them questions about their culture. Make it a two-way deal, so that they will feel that, you know, they count too. Also, offer ways. Positive feedback is probably the best way of getting any job done. And the other thing to be aware is that after a little while, some people call me and say they've had no care one day, and I'll call them and say, oh, this person is never going to work out. And I say, you have to give them enough time to see if it's going to work out or not. But if you've really done it, if you've had somebody for 3 or 4 weeks, and it absolutely does not work out, all agencies will agree to make a change. Now, if you're going to do, as at some time, if you've gone through 15, 16 home care workers, then something is, then nobody's going to change anything. But it certainly is possible to make changes, and I think that the best way to look at this kind of visit is that you and the home care agency are a team, and home care workers are a collaborative team working for the patient. And I think that's your best way to do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It is now my pleasure to introduce to you a professional social worker, an experienced educator, and administrator, Cynthia Rosen, Director of Program Management, VIP Health Services.
Thank you. I would like to thank the Reuben Becker for doing this program and including VIP. We always welcome the opportunity to do community presentations, as there are so many types of home care that it's important to get the information out to the consumers. Since Judy Brickman did cover a vast amount of information, I'm going to try and focus in on a few aspects of home care that are important, regardless of whether it's a Medicare paid-for service, Medicaid paid-for service, private insurance, or whether you're paying privately. I think the most important thing that you can do tonight is save the names and the phone numbers of the people who will be addressing you, because there's so much information that's going to be provided and already has been provided that you really want to know where to turn to get answers to your questions, because you can't possibly remember it all tonight. Before I start, I want to mention that I work for VIP. And VIP is an agency that has been providing home care services for over 23 years. We have services that are covered by Medicare, services covered by Medicaid. We accept all kinds of insurance, and we, of course, have private pay arrangements as well. VIP serves not only the New York City area, but we serve Westchester, Rockland, and Nassau counties as well. We've been serving the firm community for our entire existence, and we are always available to answer questions from family members to help you determine what is the best home care approach for you. I am now going to touch upon some of the areas that Judy Brickman spoke about, but from a different perspective. I'm going to be talking as somebody who speaks with consumers from a home care agency and who looks at their concerns with them on a regular basis. So some of the things that I'm going to be discussing relate to what if when your family member is coming out of the hospital, you do get a recommendation for Medicare services, and you know that the family member can have 4 hours a day paid for through Medicare, but you also know that you don't think, and they don't think, 4 hours is enough, and you really feel that at least 8 hours a day are something that we need. Well, if you call a home care agency, even if the hospital hasn't told you that you're eligible for Medicare services, if you call us, all of our intake workers are aware of when Medicare does cover services. They'll always explore that option. And then they'll put together services for you that will add to the Medicare piece and will provide you with, in this case, the same home care worker. And you won't have to have different people coming and going. You'll be able to have one home care worker that can be there 8 hours a day. Yes, you'll pay for 4 hours privately. Medicare will be billed for the other 4 hours, and you'll have an integrated service. That's one of the advantages of coming through an agency that has licensed services and certified services. Again, the certified are the ones covered by Medicare. So that's something important to think about when choosing a home care company. The other thing that's important is that the service that you may be eligible for initially may be covered by Medicare, but Medicare is also a short-term service. It can usually only last 4 to 8 weeks. Now, what happens when that service is over? Well, okay, you may be able to continue paying privately if you still need care and continue having that same worker provide services, but sometimes the funds start to give out. Again, another avenue is the Medicaid avenue. And often, families are worried about going that route for a variety of reasons. Some of those reasons due to address. Those reasons are that, what's the quality of the aid? Well, VIP has a contract with the city, and that contract enables us to provide Medicaid services so that if you're receiving home care services privately, and the funds run out and you are successful in putting through a Medicaid application, then you have the right to continue with that same home care provider. And the services are now covered by Medicaid. Family member doesn't have to adjust to a new worker. And oftentimes I hear people asking, oh, we don't want a Medicaid aid. There's no such thing as a Medicaid aid. These are all the same providers that are providing services. Okay, so the continuity of care can be there if you come through an agency that is able to provide a full array of services, and that's something important for you to look into. Okay. The third area, I think, is the area that relates to the personal care. Yes, it's very important to set up a task plan. Family should be part of it. Patient's physician, the patient should be part of it, the nurse from the home care agency should be involved with the task plan. But there are little subtleties that are very, very important. And VIP has its own training program. We work very hard to train our aides, yes, to the nuances of cultural difference. They are trained in a kosher kitchen, they're trained about Shabbat. We also always encourage the families to reorient them to your own kitchen, explain to them exactly how they can best serve your family member, not just regarding the practical issues, but also dietary preferences. And of course, the nurse would cover special kinds of diets as well. But the nuance of picking an aid is even beyond that. You want a personality match. You want somebody maybe who's chatty or maybe who's quiet. Again, that list that Judy spoke of is very important. Really know what to ask for, because we're sensitive and we're looking to match for many, many characteristics. So it's important to ask for those kinds of things that you think will make for a good match for your family member. And again, I just want to close by saying that recently the Home Care Association has introduced a code of ethics for all of the home care workers. They give it out, have it reviewed, have the workers sign it. It's interesting for me, and I'm glad to see that this is happening, but these are values that I can tell you have been part of VIP staff for a long time. I've worked with the company for over 10 years, and I'm also a social worker by profession. And I can tell you that respect for the patient and the dignity of the patient and fostering the independence in the patient are all values that are on the top of the list. These are basic for all of our staff members. So to finish up, the names and the phone numbers of all the presenters are important for you to take home with you tonight. It's important for you to know that there are lots of questions to ask and that you are the best advocate for your family member. So if there are questions to get through this maze of home care, call the people that are available and they'll help you out. Thank you.
The next presenter is Rabbi Spitzer. It's hard for me to describe all of his accomplishments. I can only say that while he's a Holocaust survivor, an active member of the Bikkur Cholov movement, a past president, he's founded a very unique program, which I'm sure you'll find of interest. Rabbi Spitzer.
Thank you, Ruben. You heard from the professionals about the technical and professional aspects of home care. And I, as the founder of Revival Home Care, which I founded for one purpose and one purpose only, is to render services to the Orthodox and Hasidic communities. Of course, as a certified home care agency, you have to be non-sectarian. You can't turn away anyone who turns to you for care, but we only focus on the special needs of our targeted population. When I came to this country, I lived on the Lower East Side, as so many have. There's a restaurant there on the Lancer Street, Ratner's, which I'm sure many of you have frequented. I was told that someone once walked in there and asked the fellow behind the counter if this restaurant is kosher, real kosher. So the fellow points to the portrait of his great-grandfather who founded the establishment. There's a fellow with a nice bechovet beard. And he tells me, see that? That was my great-grandfather. He founded this place, so don't ask me if this is kosher or not. So the guy tells him, listen, see, if that man was behind the counter, you'd be hanging there, I wouldn't ask. Point I'm making is that I have all our patients have my beeper number, which they use liberally, and my own daughter is in touch with every patient throughout the week. So, and when something is amiss, she's sure to call it to my attention. And the final point is that you must know that you have choices. And hospitals, when they discharge a patient, are supposed to, it's a regulation that is often honored in the breach, but they're supposed to give you what the regs call informed choices. And it would behoove you to know that there is an agency out there that focuses on the needs, on the special needs of the Haymarket population. And that is, that's not a business ploy, because it is something that I did out of necessity, not for myself, but for the patients whom we serve. And finally, I want to tell you that in many cases, when patients are not given that informed choice, and the social worker just picks an agency either by the Rolodex, without regard for the special needs of the patient, or for some other motives that do not focus on the needs of the patient, you, as the consumer, have to be alert to that fact and make your choices accordingly. As the young lady who preceded me mentioned, you have the numbers of the of all the presenters, and I guess my number is there as well, and you're advised or to call that number or any other number that you feel touches your responsive chord in this evening's presentation, and we will be glad to assist you in any way possible. Thank you.
That was Rabbi Spitzer, founder of the Bible Home Care. Jonathan Gibbons. He is a professional associated with perhaps the oldest and most renowned home care agency in the metropolitan New York area, perhaps in the United States, the Veterinary Service of New York, Mr. Jonathan Gibbons.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Good evening, everyone. I was told by Mr. Becker when we first met that I have 5 minutes to do the most extensive delivery on home care that is required to this audience. I want to thank you, first of all, for giving me this opportunity to share with you what Visiting Nurse Services of New York Home Care delivers to the community. Like the other agencies, we all look forward to deliver service that is of high quality, nature, and substance to every individual patient that we service. We are the largest home care service in the New York metropolitan area. We are a nonprofit organization, and the historical perspective of this organization stems from 103 years, going to 104 years old. It started on the east side, where a renowned lady by the name of Lillian Wall climbed over roofs when she recognized the need of mothers. It started from mothers who were giving birth to children and no intensive care or no particular care was measured out to them. Home care has grown from those years, and it has become more scientific. It has become what we look forward to now, not only us having a home health unit, but having many other disciplines involved in the care of our family. And to meet the needs of each, since our community or our in this country, there's so many, many races and so much languages spoken, our home care have looked at each category and have tailored programs to meet the needs of each population. So we have a myriad of programs. We have multicultural programs. And in the multicultural program, we have programs that meet the needs of our Jewish population. And that program was designed by...
Sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt for an important announcement. Unfortunately, there's some cars that are blocking the driveway and some people need to leave. I don't know if anyone's here. Thank you, I'm sorry.
Okay. That's all right. He's leaving.
He's leaving.
Yes. Okay, some of the services, let me tell you about some of the services that all of the care agencies are. I'm not going to talk about visiting nursing room, or your family is usually picked up from the hospital, it does not negate the fact that you can call the home care agency, whichever home care agency you so desire. Or you can consult with your doctors. And bear in mind, I want you to be cognizant of the fact that the doctor, any patient, is the captain of the ship. The doctor is the most important person. Every home care in the metropolitan community works under the auspices of the doctor. If you are not satisfied with the home care, you can either consult with your doctor, or you can do this independently and go to the home care and request measure of changes for your family. Some of the services the home care usually offer are professional nursing services that was mentioned before, physical, occupational, and speech therapy. So it's not only nursing services or the home health care services provided by home care. Social workers who would go in and work towards the acceptance of those Medicaid eligibility if you do not have the eligibility and you need to spend down. Infusion therapy, maternal child health, and pediatric care, very important for our young mothers. A mother may have been in the hospital and she may have had surgery to deliver, and after that surgery, she may need dressing at home. That can be done at some home care agencies. Home health aid, as we all know, and then there are other categories such as various programs. We have long-term care programs, acute program, which is the short one, the Lombardi program, as mentioned by Judy. We have also, there are programs to consider special level of infection, such as the HIV patient. You can't leave them out. It happens to every one of us. There's special programs or special science trained to meet the needs of those programs. The hospice, mental health, and many other programs not mentioned here this evening. One important thing, most of the patients who go home, elderly patients, do need some measure of equipment. Equipment companies provide those equipment. Usually they are negotiated between the home care to be delivered and the hospital to be delivered to service the client in the home. Or it can be ordered by you for your family privately. Or the doctor could call and order that equipment. But you know, the federal government looks into equipment supply very, very stringent manner. So it is always important that you pre-arrange this, especially for the patient who is being discharged from the hospital, that it can meet the needs of the patient. Let me talk about equipment. What are some of the things we talk that patients require? They require a raised toilet seat if they have a fracture in the hip. They require oxygen. They may require a walk. They may require lots of other things. Even the patient who cannot ambulate properly or get run from one part of their home to the other may require a special light. They may require an alert system. Some patients cannot have the hours that they require. So what you can do, working with the city, an alert system can be placed for them. They can have the services in the day, and in the night, there's an alert system. If it's a CHF patient, they become exasperated, they can alert the ambulance would be right here, or someone would be right here to talk to. So these are the myriad of programs that all home care services offer. Patients can be handled not only from hospitals, but we must stress that patients can be taken out from nursing homes now. They can be taken out from rehab facilities. We have seen patients leaving the hospital, and after they leave the hospital, they go to the rehab facility, then they transition to home. The visiting nurse services have designed a program, a special laboratory program that we have, that consider the needs of the Jewish patient, consider all religious aspects, their occupation of their food, their diet, everything. There's a brochure there on the table for your information purpose. And I will close thanking you for listening to me. You can always call the visiting Business Center. We have 212-290-3800. I am sure the Business Services is so large that we work with all the other agencies, and we are usually happy to coordinate our services to meet the needs of patients. In closing, I want to thank you for listening to me, and thank you very much.
Now we are going to focus on the hospice care. We have the good fortune of having with us someone who's had leadership experience in hospice and a program that's renowned throughout the metropolitan New York and throughout the country. It's my pleasure now to introduce to you Melissa Borowski, Community Liaison in Metropolitan Jewish Health System. We'll talk about the hospice program.
As Ruben said, the Talmud says, "Pleasant Park Daksanya." It's customary to thank the house. Ruben already thanked the Am Yisrael, so let me give two thanks, if you'll bear with me for a moment. Tremendous thank you to Mr. Ruben Becker. The work that he puts in is unbelievable. I've seen only the tip of the iceberg, and that's been overwhelming. Juggling a full-time job and a family, Kenai Nohara, the work that he's put into Laura Yemen to be able to bring these types of symposiums to the Jewish community is unbelievable. So a tremendous thank you on my behalf and on behalf of the ABC. Secondly, I'm going to talk about Jewish hospice in a moment. Much of the success that the Jewish hospice has had, especially in Queens, has been due to our tremendous community advisory board. A few members are here this evening. Mr. Hale Barron, who's our president of the community advisory board, led by King, Dr. Bennett, who's back. A few of many people who have worked very hard to help introduce these vital services to the community. Thanks to them, and thanks to the fact that it serves such a crucial need. Just going to read a quick list. The Queens Jewish Community Council, the Beaker Holm of Queens, and the Vonner Abundant of Queens have all endorsed the Jewish Hospice of Greater New York. Thank you for putting up with my thank yous. I'm going to enjoy a luxury that I didn't have as a youth. Since my name begins with a letter B, when they go around class, when I was in grade school about a million years ago, so I'd be one of the first people that had to talk, and I'd have to put my opinions out in the open. By the time they get around to the P's, I'm not going to give with Q's, but you know, at the end of the line, everyone got to say, I agree, I disagree. So this evening, for once, I had the luxury of saying that most of what I wanted to talk about has already been covered. But let me expand a little bit, especially on what Ms. Brickman talked about. Jewish hospice. We talk about hospice first. When people hear about hospice, they often think of two things. Number one, the first thing they think is that perhaps the word hospital has been mispronounced. Okay? Over the past 4 years that the Jewish hospice has existed, I think that has slowly began to whittle away. The second thing you'll hear quite often is that hospice, if people say, yeah, they know what hospice is, they say it's a place where people go to die. Okay, I see people shaking their heads. That happens almost every time, wherever you present, Jewish, not Jewish, people constantly hear that refrain. That is a misnomer. It's a tremendous misconception. It's a tremendous myth. First of all, hospice is not a place. It is basically a concept. It's a philosophy of care, caring for the terminally ill. Do people go to die in a hospice program? Yes. The reality is the overwhelming majority of people that are entered into a hospice program are going to pass away. We don't. We have a little bit of tact, a little bit of coof. We don't knock on a person's door and say, hey, we're the hospice. We heard you're the person who's about to die. Hospice, another thing you hear in the community tremendously across the country and really across the world is death with dignity. Hospice stresses living with dignity. However much time a person has left to live, believe is in the hands of the Almighty, whatever amount of time that is should be spent with as much comfort and dignity as possible. Let me, before I talk about the some of the requirements to get into a hospice, which in general you hear about requirements, they're usually dry. You hear about hospice requirements, they are dry and to some degree scary. So let me just start off with in Elena, which you say a few times a day, it says, Yadata Yoma Shivosa Elavata. You're supposed to know certain things and then place them on your heart. I'm going to reverse the order for a moment and talk to the heart. I'm going to read you two brief comments from hospice patients that we received a few days ago. Number one, my family and I can't thank you enough for the hospice experience we recently had. It was short, only 36 hours, but it was truly the jolt of security, warmth, and compassion I needed to help my mother through at the very end. Number two, another family, my husband Irving, had hospice care for just a few weeks. But what a difference that that time brought to his life. I'll be forever grateful that our doctor sent us to you. One other comment. It's rather sad that one has to be dying to receive such wonderful care. Hospice is a program for people who have been diagnosed with terminal illness. Another myth is that it's not only cancer. Predominantly cancer, yes, but not exclusively cancer. A person has to have a diagnosis from his physician of 6 months or less to live. The second key is that a person is no longer seeking or receiving aggressive treatment, as Ms. Brickman had alluded to. It could be either that they have gone for aggressive treatment and unfortunately has not worked, or it could be that they have opted not to receive or seek such treatment. Services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and almost all HMOs and insurances. Care is provided primarily in the home. Overwhelming majority is in the home. We have an inpatient unit for short-term emergency care. One thing that the community has sought, we hear this refrain over and over again, is are there any facilities for long-term hospice care? For actual hospice care long-term, they do not exist. Unfortunately, the reason could be discussed at a different venue in a different form, but there are short-term units for emergency care. With hospice, care is administered by an interdisciplinary team. Nurses, social workers, therapists, home health aides, all go into a person's home. People call an incredible crisis. Death is not pretty under any circumstances, and neither is the near-death experience. But the fact that a team literally comes swooping in, at first people are a little bit disoriented, but after a few days, the fact that they can begin to calm down and can begin to not get on with their lives, but begin to attend a little bit to the quote-unquote normal functioning helps ease things tremendously. Hospice stresses a holistic view of patients and families. Number one, that a person is composed of physical, emotional, and spiritual. Because if you give the person a pain pill but don't attend to the other needs, it's really only half of the battle. And secondly, holistic in the sense that no man or woman is an island. You have to attend to the needs of the family and caregivers and friends of that terminally ill patient as well. Some of the biggest issues that we face in hospice is the concept of hope. We face this, I don't think that it's endemic only to Jews, I think it's part of the human condition, but we find it especially in the Jewish community and very, very, very strongly in the Orthodox community. People do not want to make hospice referrals when they're appropriate because they feel that that is an act of giving up hope. It's a very difficult question. Number one, in the Jewish hospice, we stress very much as possible, to ask the rabbi that the patient or family is affiliated with. We have our own rabbi, Rabbi Scheinberg, who's an expert in medical ethics and halakha, and halakha in general, but particularly medical halakha. We make him available to all of our patients and families. They do not have to use Rabbi Scheinberg. They can use their own rabbis. Their rabbis can speak with our rabbis, but we encourage rabbinic consultation as much as possible. It's almost comical, if you can think of anything that's comical in a hospice situation, where you'll have a non-Jewish worker at the hospice urging this Orthodox person to speak to their rabbi. And they're looking at us like we're nuts. But we have been very much trained by rabbinic staff to encourage asking rabbinical consultation as much as possible. Hope, I heard somebody speak once, they didn't look it up in the dictionary, yet somebody told me that hope has 18 different definitions in the dictionary. There are different types, different levels, different varieties, different approaches to hope. And sometimes hope may have to be reevaluated, hoping for a pain-free day, hoping to live to see a chasna, to see a bar mitzvah. And that is what we constantly stress with our patients. You'll hear Rabbi Stern, who's our rabbinic coordinator. He's a rabbi who visits patients in their homes, in our inpatient unit. speak about some of the issues that he faces holistically, but also on a pastoral level. And there is a way to inculcate hope and to foster hope in people that are terminally ill and in their families as well. With hospice, everything is stressed in the home. We even have a physician that visits patients in the home. Today, again, it's unfortunate you have to be terminally ill to receive such type of care, but it's almost impossible, obviously, to get a physician to come into one's home. The physician, the nurses, everyone is in the home. All of the medical equipment is brought into the home. All of the prescriptions are delivered to the home 24 hours, 7 days a week. Hospice is available 24 hours, 7 days a week. Between 9 and 5, you get the office directly. Any other time, the service puts you through directly. I've seen many instances where people at 3 o'clock, two more hours to speak, that people call between, let's say, 3 and 4 in the morning, maybe 5 or 6 times. Hospice is incredibly patient. They've seen, unfortunately, the death process, the dying process, not even dozens of times, hundreds of times, if not thousands of times. Not that they're callous to it, but they're used to it, and they're able to handle the situation and to calm the families down and to give them the advice that they need at that moment. If you look in your packets, there's packets in the back, there are a few vital articles that I hope you'll read at some point. One is a Jewish Observer article that Rabbi Stern wrote, which really delineates some of the crucial aspects of hospice care. I'm just going to read you a few quick things that I would advise anyone, anywhere in the world, to ask if, unfortunately, they need to find a hospice. Number one, does the program have a competent halakhic advisor available to deal with relevant questions of Jewish law, especially those of end-of-life issues? Will the program allow the family to utilize their own rabbi in addressing these patient care needs, and especially the following? These are crucial in hospice care. Blood transfusions, antibiotic therapy, and IV hydration. There's a tremendous amount of debate within the hospice community worldwide about these. We have made a commitment to provide these when medically needed and when a rabbi of the family requests it. Will the hospice recognize halakhic living rules? You have a copy of A Good as Yitzhak's halakhic living rules. There are many versions that are out there. Will the hospice acknowledge and respect the halakhic living will? Are they insisting that a person sign a DNR? If there is an inpatient unit that a patient is sent to, just a basic question, is there kosher food available? Another myth is that hospice patients don't need kosher food because hospice patients aren't eating. There are some that don't, and there are some that do. And are policies in place at the inpatient unit to deal with deaths on Shabbos or Yom Kippur? Though I am a confirmed Litvak, and though I think Ruben's about to give me another piece of paper, so I'm going to finish now. Zero, my gosh. I'm going to quote, and I didn't bring the piece of paper with me, so I'm going to give you a basic quote from what I remember from my bulletin board. A particular Hasidic Rebbe said, this is a, incumbent upon every person is to be sensitive to the pain of any person, man or woman, Jew or non-Jew, righteous or wicked, any creature of God. This is the essence of Judaism. And we stress that this should be the essence of any Jewish hospice. Thank you for your time.
Are there any questions at this point, or should we continue with the program? Okay, let's continue with the program.